Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'm continuing with John Milton's Paradise Lost. We're now to Book 11. John Milton's Paradise Lost, and we are now at Book 11. First, the argument. The Son of God presents to his Father the prayers of our first parents now repenting and intercedes for them. God accepts them, but declares that they must no longer abide in paradise. Sends Michael with a band of cherubim to dispossess them, but first to reveal to Adam future things, Michael's coming down. Adam shows to Eve certain ominous signs. He discerns Michael's approach, goes out to meet him. The angel denounces their departure. Eve's lamentation. Adam pleads, but submits. The angel leads him up to a high hill, sets before him, in vision, what shall happen till the flood. Remember, at the end of Book 10, Adam and Eve had decided to go back to the place of their judgment, to repent, to fall prostrate before God, and confess, and with contrite hearts, and seek mercy. Line 1. They thus in lowliest plight repentant stood praying, and from the mercy seat above, prevenient grace, descending had removed the stony from their hearts and made new flesh regenerate grow instead. Prevenient grace is a theological term, and it's the antecedent to human action. It means before they ask, they have been grace has been bestowed on them. And of course, the mercy seat is on the Ark of the Covenant between the two cherubim. And so this is symbolic to that. Of course, this would predate that, because this is Adam and Eve. This is just after creation. And we won't have the mercy seat until God has the Israelites build that after the Exodus, sometime after Exodus chapter 12, when they build the tabernacle and all of the things for that. But the mercy seat, this would be symbolic, and this would be foreshadowing that solid physical mercy seat. So prevenient grace descending had removed the stony from their hearts and made new flesh regenerate grow instead, that sighs now breathed unutterable, which the spirit of prayer inspired, and winged for heaven with speedier flight than loudest oratory. Yet their port, their importance, not of mean suitors, nor important less seemed their petition than when the ancient pair in fables old, yet less ancient yet than these, Deucalion and chaste Pyrrha, the first man, to restore the race of mankind drowned, before the shrine of Themis stood devout. To heaven their prayers, flew up, nor missed the way, by envious winds blown vagabond or frustrate. In they passed, dimensionless, through heavenly doors, then clad with incense, where the golden altar fumed, by their great intercessor. And of course, this is Christ. Their prayers have gone up to heaven and up to the golden altar, fumed, and by their great intercessor, and that's Christ interceding. Came in sight before the Father's throne. Them, the glad Son presenting, thus to intercede began. And so this is Christ speaking to the Father here in line 22. See, Father, what first fruits on earth are sprung from thy implanted grace in man. These sighs and prayers, which in this golden censer mixed with incense, I, thy priest, before thee bring. Fruits of more pleasing savor than from seed sown with contrition in his heart, than those which his own hand, manuring all the trees of paradise, could have produced, ere fallen from innocence. Now, this is interesting, because is Milton implying here that it's better that they are fallen, when he says that these prayers, sown with contrition in his heart, are better than those which his own hand, manuring all the trees of paradise, could have produced, ere fallen from innocence? Very interesting theologically. Line 30. Now therefore bend thine ear to supplication, which is pleading. Hear his sighs, though mute, unskillful with what words to pray. Let me interpret for him, me, his advocate, and propitiation. And, of course, to propitiate is to appease or to appease to be reconciled. Okay, to appease or to reconcile. And me, his advocate and propitiation, all his works on me, good or not good, engraft. My merit those shall perfect, and for these my death shall pay. Accept me, and in me from these receive the smell of peace toward mankind. Let him live before thee reconciled, at least his days numbered, though sad, till death, his doom, which I to mitigate thus plead, not to reverse, to better life shall yield him, where with me all my redeemed may dwell in joy and bliss, made one with me as I with thee am one. Here Christ is pleading for them and asking God to accept him as propitiation for their sin, and wants to have them dwell with him in joy, have his redeemed joy, dwell with him forever in joy. To whom the Father, without cloud serene, and this is line 45, all thy request for man, accepted son, obtain. All thy request was my degree, but longer in that paradise to dwell, the law I gave to nature him forbid. Ah, and so now we know that they must leave paradise, but longer in that paradise to dwell, the law I gave to nature him forbids. And so he must be forbidden to dwell there. Those pure, immortal elements that know no gross, and something gross would be something that had to be purged out, something unpure, no unharmonious mixture foul, eject him tainted now. Now he is tainted, and we have disorder in the universe. And purge him off as a distemper, gross to air as gross, and mortal food, as may dispose him best for dissolution wrought by sin, that first distempered all things, and of incorrupt corrupted. I at first with two fair gifts created him endowed, with happiness and immortality, that fondly lost, this other served but to eternize woe. Till I provided death, so death becomes his final remedy, and after life, tried in sharp tribulation and refined by faith and faithful works, to second life, waked in the renovation of the just, resigns him up with heaven and earth renewed. 65. But let us call to synod, to counsel all the blessed through heaven's wide bounds. From them I will not hide my judgments, how with mankind I proceed, and how with peccant, angels late they saw. Peccant meaning sinful or disobedient, angels late they saw. 70. And in their state, though firm, stood more confirmed. He ended, and the sun gave signal high to the bright minister that watched. He blew his trumpet, heard in Oreb, since perhaps when God descended, and perhaps once more to sound at general doom. The angelic blast filled all the regions, from their blissful bowers of amaranthine shade, fountain or spring, and amaranthine is it's a poetic flower only. They're a colorful flower that were said to never die. So they're symbolic for unfading life or deathless. So flowers of amaranthine shade, fountain or spring, by the waters of life, where they sat in fellowship of joy, the sons of light hasted, resorting to the summons high, and took their seats, till from his throne supreme the Almighty thus pronounced his sovereign will. And so God is speaking to the heavenlies. O sons, like one of us man is become, to know both good and evil, since his taste of that defended fruit. But let him boast his knowledge of good lost and evil got. Happier had it sufficed him to have known good by itself, and evil not at all. He sorrows now, repents, and prays contrite. My motions in him longer than they move his heart, I know, how variable and vain self left. Lest, therefore, his now bolder hand reach also of the tree of life, and eat and live forever, dream at least to live forever, to remove him, I decree. And so here, lines 93 to 96, God decrees that man must be removed from the garden before he eats of the tree of life. To remove him, I decree, and send him from the garden forth to till the ground whence he was taken. fitter soil. Michael, this my behest thou have in charge. Take to thee from among the cherubim, 100, thy chance of flaming warriors, lest to the fiend, or in behalf of man, or to invade vacant possession, some new trouble raise. Haste thee, and from the paradise of God, without remorse, drive out the sinful pair. 105. From hallowed ground, the unholy, and denounce to them and to their progeny from hence perpetual banishment. Yet, lest they faint at the sad sentence rigorously urged, for I behold them softened and with tears bewailing their excess, all terror, hide. If patiently thy bidding they obey, dismiss them not disconsolate. Reveal to Adam what shall come in future days, as I shall thee enlightened, intermix my covenant in the woman's seed renewed, so send them forth, though sorrowing, yet in peace. So, if they are obedient, if they leave quietly and they're obedient, then tell them about the hope to come. And on the east side of the garden place, where entrance up from Eden easiest climbs, cherubic watch, place a cherubic watch, a guard, and of a sword, the flame wide waving, 120, all approach far off to fright, and guard all passage to the tree of life, lest paradise a receptacle prove to spirits foul, and all my trees their prey, with whose stolen fruit man once more to delude. Line 125. So they're going to set a cherubic watch, a set of cherubic with a sword of flame. That is not the picture that we normally have of a cherub, is it? He ceased, and the archangelic power prepared for swift descent. With him the cohort bright of watchful cherubim, four faces each had, like a double Janus. This again is a Homeric simile. Janus was the god that had a face on both sides of its head. Like a double Janus, all their shape, spangled with eyes more numerous than those of Argus. Argus had 100 eyes, and more wakeful than to drowse, charmed with Arcadian pipe, the pastoral reed of Hermes. Hermes was the guide in heaven, or his opiate rod. Meanwhile, to re-salute the world with sacred light, Leucothea waked, and with fresh dews embalmed the earth, when Adam and first matron Eve had ended now their orisons, and found strength added from above, new hope to spring out of despair, joy, but with fear yet linked. This is the morning after their sin, which thus to Eve his welcome words renewed. Line 140. Eve, easily may faith admit that all the good which we enjoy from heaven descends, but that from us aught should ascend to heaven so prevalent as to concern the mind of God high blessed, or to incline his will, hard to belief may seem, yet this will prayer, or one short sigh, of human breath, upborne even to the seat of God. For since I sought by prayer the offended deity to appease, kneeled and before him humbled all my heart, 150, methought I saw him placable and mild, bending his ear. Persuasion in me grew that I was heard with favor. Peace returned home to my breast, and to my memory his promise, that thy seed shall bruise our foe, line 155. Which then, not minded in dismay, yet now assures me that the bitterness of death is past, and we shall live. Hence, hail to thee, Eve, rightly called, mother of all mankind, mother of all things living, since by thee man is to live, and all things live for man. To whom thus Eve, with sad demeanor meek, and so this is Eve speaking to Adam, ill worthy I such title should belong to me, transgressor, who for thee ordained a help, became thy snare. Okay? I was ordained to be your helper, and I became your snare. To me reproach rather belongs, or blame, distrust and all dispraise, but infinite in pardon was my judge, that I who first brought death on all am graced the source of life. And next favorable thou, who highly thus to entitle me vouchsafest, far other name deserving. But the field to labor calls us now with sweat imposed, though after sleepless night, for see the morn, all unconcerned with our unrest, begins her rosy progress smiling. Let us forth, I never from thy side henceforth to stray. Line 176. So Eve says, they have had a sleepless night, but the morning is not concerned with their unrest. The morning could care less whether they slept or not. And so she says, we have to go forth, and I'm never going to stray from your side again. Where'er our work our day's work lies, though now enjoined laborious, till day droop, while here we dwell. What can be toilsome in these pleasant walks? Here let us live, though in fallen state content. And so Eve is saying, well, here, while we're enjoined till day droop, while here we dwell, what can be toilsome in these pleasant walks? Here let us live, though in a fallen state content. Line 180, Eve is saying, oh well, we still have the garden. So spake, so wished much humbled Eve, but fate subscribed not. This is a foreshadowing. Nature gave first signs, impressed on bird, beast, air. Air suddenly eclipsed after short blush of morn, nigh on her sight the bird of Jove, that would be an eagle, Jove's bird, stooped from his airy tower, two birds of gayest plume before him drove. So they look up, and as a hint of what's to come, they see an eagle that in line 186, and he's driving two birds in front of him. Down from a hill the beast that reigns in woods, first hunter then, pursued a gentle brace, goodliest of all the forest. Ah, a beast that reigns, that would be a lion. And so they see a lion pursuing a gentle brace, goodliest of all the forest, hart and hind. So a lion is chasing a deer. Direct to the eastern gate was bent their flight, Adam observed, and with his eye the chase pursuing, not unmoved to eat, Eve thus spake. Oh, Eve, some further change awaits us nigh, which heaven by these mute signs in nature shows forerunners of his purpose, or to warn us happily to secure of our discharge from penalty. So Adam is saying, Eve, we may have spoken too soon. Look at this. Or maybe this is a sign to warn us that we've been a little bit too secure, thinking that we were let off from the penalty. Because from death released some days, how long and what till then our life, who knows, or more than this, that we are dust, and hither must return and be no more. Line 200. Why else this double object in our sight, of flight pursued in the air and o'er the ground, one's way the selfsame hour? Why in the east darkness ere day's mid-course, and morning light more orient in yon western cloud that draws o'er the blue firmament, a radiant white, and slow descends with something heavenly fraught? I see something, there's something coming down from heaven. He erred not, for by this the heavenly bands down from a sky of jasper lighted now in paradise, and on a hill made alt a glorious apparition, line 211, had not doubt and carnal fear that day dimmed Adam's eye. Not that more glorious when the angels met Jacob in Manaam, where he saw the field pavilioned with his guardians bright, nor that which on the flaming mount appeared in Dothan. This is a biblical allusion, covered with a camp of fire against the Syrian king, who to surprise one man, assassin-like, had levied war unproclaimed. The princely hierarch, the Michael, in their bright stand, there left his powers to seize possession of the garden, he alone to find where Adam sheltered took his way, not unperceived of Adam, who to Eve, while the great visitant approached, thus spake. So Adam is speaking to Eve now. Eve, now expect great things, which perhaps of us will soon determine. Okay, maybe our future is going to be determined very soon. Get prepared. Here comes an angel. We'll soon determine or impose new laws to be observed. For I see, from yonder blazing cloud that veils the hill, one of the heavenly host. And by his gait, which is his walk or his stride, none of the meanest, okay, which would be none of the least. Some great potentate, or of the thrones above, such majesty invests him coming, yet not terrible that I should fear, nor sociably mild, because remember Raphael was the sociable angel, nor sociably mild as Raphael, that I should much confide, but Solomon sublime, whom not to offend, with reverence I must meet, and thou retire. Okay, I've got a job to do. You wait here while I get the news. Thou retire. He ended. And the archangel soon drew nigh, not in his shape celestial, but as man, clad to meet man, line 240. Over his lucid arms a military, vest of purple flowed livelier than Malevolin, or the grain of Sarah worn by kings and heroes old in time of truce. Iris had dipped the woof, his starry helm unbuckled showed him prime in manhood where youth ended, by his side, as, and here's another Homeric simile, as in a glistering zodiac hung the sword, Satan's dire dread, and in his hand the spear. Adam bowed low, he kingly from his state inclined not, but his coming thus declared. Line 251. And so Michael is speaking here to Adam. Adam, heaven's high behest no preface needs. Sufficient that thy prayers are heard, and death, then due by sentence when thou didst transgress, defeated of his seizure many days given thee of grace. Okay, so you're not going to die. You get many days because of grace. Wherein thou mayest repent, line 255, and one bad act with many deeds well done mayest cover. Well may then thy Lord appease, redeem thee quite from death's rapacious claim. But longer in this paradise to dwell permits not. To remove thee, I am come. I'm come here to make you leave the garden. Line 261. And send thee from the garden forth to till the ground whence thou wast taken, fitter soil. He added not, for Adam at the news, heart-struck, with chilling gripe of sorrow, stood, that all his senses bound. Eve, who unseen yet all had heard, Eve is overhearing, with audible lament, discovered soon the place of her retire, which means that she made such a big noise, that soon the place she had gone to retire, the place she had hidden, was soon discovered. Oh, unexpected stroke, worse than of death! Must I thus leave thee paradise? Thus leave thee native soil, these happy walks and shades, fit haunts of gods, where I had hoped to spend, quiet though sad, the respite of the day that must be mortal to us both. O flowers, that never will in other climate grow, my early visitation and my last at even, which I bred up with tender hand from the first opening bud, and gave ye names, who now shall rear ye to the sun, or rank your tribes and water from the ambrosial fount? Thee lastly, nuptial bower, okay, in line 280, oh no, even our honeymoon bower, by me adorned, with what to sight or smell was sweet, from thee how shall I part, and whither wander down into a lower world, to this obscure and wild? How shall we breathe in other air less pure, accustomed to immortal fruits? Whom thus the angel interrupted mild, lament not, Eve, but patiently resign what justly thou hast lost. Nor set thy heart thus overfond on that which is not thine. Thy going is not lonely. With thee goes thy husband. Him to follow thou art bound. Where he abides, think there thy native soil. Adam by this, from the cold, sudden damp recovering, and his spirits scattered, soon returned. To Michael thus his humble words addressed. 295. Celestial, whether among the thrones, or named of them the highest, for such of shape may seem prince above princes, gently hast thou told thy message, which might else in telling wound, and in performing end us. What besides of sorrow and dejection and despair our frailty can sustain, thy tidings bring, departure from this happy place, our sweet recess, and only consolation left familiar to our eyes. 305. All places else inhospitable appear and desolate, nor knowing us nor known. And if by prayer incessant I could hope to change the will of him who all things can, I would not cease to weary him with my assiduous cries. All right, I would beg if I thought it might change his mind. Line 311. But prayer against his absolute decree no more avails than breath against the wind, blown stifling back on him that breathes it forth. Therefore, to his great bidding, I submit. This most afflicts me, that departing hence, as from his face I shall be hid. Okay, line 315. The worst part will be not seeing his face. As from his face I shall be hid. Deprived his blessed countenance. Here I could frequent with worship place by place, where he vouchsafed presence divine, and to my sons relate, on this mount, okay, I could have, if I could stay here, I could tell all my children all these special places, I could say, line 320, on this mount he appeared, under this tree stood visible, among these pines his voice I heard, here with him at this fountain talked. So many graceful altars I would rear off grassy turf, and pile up every stone of luster from the brook, in memory or monument to ages, and thereon offer sweet-smelling gums and fruits and flowers. In yonder nether world, where shall I seek his bright appearances or footstep trace? For though I fled him angry, yet recalled to life prolonged and promised race, I now gladly behold, though but his utmost skirts of glory, and far off his steps adore. To whom thus Michael, with regard benign, Adam, thou knowest heaven his, and all the earth, 335. Not this rock only. His omnipresence fills land, sea, and air, and every kind that lives, fomented by his virtual power and warmed. All the earth he gave thee to possess and rule, no despicable gift. Surmise not, then, his presence to these narrow bounds confined. Okay, don't think God only comes to paradise, Adam. Don't think his presence to these narrow bonds confined of paradise or Eden. This had been perhaps thy capital seat, from whence had spread all generations, and had hither come from all the ends of the earth, to celebrate and reverence thee, their great progenitor. But this preeminence thou hast lost, brought down to dwell on even ground now with thy sons. Yet doubt not, but in valley and in plain, God is as here, and will be found alike present, and of his presence many a sign still following thee. Okay, God can be found anywhere. Still compassing thee around with goodness and paternal love, his face express, and of his steps the track divine, which that thou mayest believe and be confirmed, ere thou from hence depart, before you leave here, line 356, know I am sent to show thee what shall come in future days to thee and to thy offspring, good with bad expect to hear, supernal grace contending with sinfulness of men, thereby to learn true patience and to temper joy with fear and pious sorrow. So he's going to share these prophecies with him and to temper the joy with fear and pious sorrow. Equally inured by moderation, either state to bear, prosperous or adverse, so shalt thou lead safest thy life and best endure thy mortal passage when it comes. Ascend this hill. Let Eve, for I have drenched her eyes, okay, let me show you something while Eve sleeps. For I've drenched her eyes. Here, sleep below, while thou to foresight wakest. Okay, so let Eve here sleep, while thou to foresight wakest, as once thou sleptst, while she to life was formed. And so, just as once you slept, while she was brought to life, I want her to sleep, while I show you these prophecies and show you all the things to come. Line 370. To whom thus Adam gratefully replied, Ascend, I follow thee, safe guide, the path thou leadest me, and to the hand of heaven submit, however chastening. To the evil turn my obvious breast, arming to overcome by suffering, and earn rest from labor won, if so I may attain. So both ascend in the visions of God. It was a hill of paradise, the highest, from whose top the hemisphere of earth in clearest ken stretched out to amplest reach of prospect lay. Not higher that hill, nor wider looking round, whereon for different cause the tempter set our second Adam in the wilderness. This is referencing Matthew 4:8, when Satan put Christ in a high place. So this was not higher than that place, where the tempter set our second Adam in the wilderness, that's 383, to show him all earth's kingdoms and their glory. His eye might there command, wherever stood, city of old or modern fame, the seat of mightiest empire. From the destined walls of Kambalu, seat of Cathay and Can, and Samarkand by Oxus, Temir's throne, to Pakin of Sinian kings, and hence to Agra and Lahore of Great Mogul, down to the golden Chersonese, or where the Persian in Ecbatan sat, or since in Isfahan, or where the Russian Tsar in Moscow, or the Sultan in Byzance, Turkestan born, nor could his eye not kin the empire of Negus to his utmost port, Erkarko and the less maritime kings, Mombasa and Kiloa and Melind and Sofala thought Ophir, to the realm of Congo and Angola farthest south, or hence from Niger flood to Atlas mount the kingdoms of Almanzor, Fez, and Suz, Morocco and Algiers and Tremesen, on Europe hence and where Rome was to sway the world. In spirit, perhaps, he also saw, and so Milton is telling us here, now I'm at line 407, these are all the things that Michael showed to Adam. He showed them all of these things to come. He also saw rich Mexico, the seat of Montezuma, and Cusco in Peru, the richer seat of Atahualpa, and yet unspoiled Guinea, whose great city Garion's sons called El Dorado. But to nobler sights, Michael, from Adam's eyes, the film removed, which that false fruit, that promised clearer sight, had bred. Then, purged with ephrasy, that's an herb, and rue the visual nerve, for he had much to see. Line 415. And from the well of life, three drops instilled. So Michael puts these drops into Adam's eyes so that he can see like he could have seen before he sinned. So deep the power of these ingredients pierced, even to the inmost seat of mental sight, that Adam now, enforced to close his eyes, sunk down, and all his spirits became entranced. But him the gentle angel by the hand soon raised, and his attention thus recalled. Adam, now ope thy eyes, and first behold the effects which thy original crime hath wrought in some to spring from thee. Okay, so take, I want to show you future humans, the people who come from you, who never touched the accepted tree, nor with the snake conspired, 426, nor sinned thy sin, yet from that sin derive corruption to bring forth more violent deeds. His eyes he opened, and beheld a field, part arable and tilth, whereon were sheaves new reaped, the other part sheep walks and folds, in the midst an altar, as the landmark stood rustic, of grassy sword. Thither anon a sweaty reaper from his tillage brought first fruits, the green ear and the yellow sheaf, 435. Unculled as came to hand, a shepherd next more meek came with the firstlings of his flock, choicest and best, then sacrificing. Laid the inwards and their fat with incense strewed on the cleft wood, and all due rites performed, his offering soon propitious fire from heaven consumed with nimble glance. So Adam is looking at an animal sacrifice. That's what will now be required for their sins. They're going to have to sacrifice animals. And Adam is watching this. And grateful steam. The others not, for his was not sincere, whereat he inly raged, and as they talked, smote him into the midriff with a stone. 445. Adam is watching Cain slay Abel. And let's see, 445. Smote him into the midriff with a stone that beat out life. He fell, and deadly pale, groaned out his soul, with gushing blood effused. Much at that sight was Adam in his heart dismayed, and thus in haste to the angel cried, O teacher, some great mischief hath befallen to that meek man, who well had sacrificed. Is piety thus and pure devotion paid? Is that what you get for being pious and devoted? To whom Michael thus, he also moved, replied, These two are brethren, Adam, and to come out of thy loins. Line 455, The unjust the just hath slain, for envy that his brother's offering found from heaven acceptance. But the bloody fact will be avenged, and the other's faith approved. Lose no reward, though here thou see him die, rolling in dust and gore. To which our sire, and so Adam is still in shock. He's just seen a murder. And Michael has very calmly said, don't worry, his faith will be approved and he won't lose any reward, even though you see him dying here, rolling in dust and gore. So Adam replies, alas, both for the deed and for the cause. But have I now seen death? Is this the way I must return to native dust? Oh, sight of terror, foul and ugly to behold, horrid to think, how horrible to feel. To whom thus Michael, Death thou hast seen in his first shape on man, but many shapes of death, and many are the ways that lead to his grim cave, all dismal, yet to sense more terrible at the entrance than within. Okay, so it's death is worse, line 470. Michael tells Adam, it always looks worse at the entrance than it is when you actually do it. Some, as thou sawest, by violent stroke shall die, by fire, flood, famine, by intemperance, more in meats and drinks, which on the earth shall bring diseases dire, of which a monstrous crew before thee shall appear, that thou mayest know what misery the inabstinence of Eve shall bring on men. Immediately a place before his eyes appeared, sad, noisome, dark, a lazar house, it seemed, wherein were laid numbers of all diseased, a lazar house, numbers of all diseased, this would be a hospital, all maladies of ghastly spasm or racking torture, qualms of heartsick agony, all feverish kinds, convulsions, epilepsies, fierce catarrhs, intestine stone and ulcer, colic pains, demonic frenzy, moping melancholy and moonstruck madness, pining atrophy, marasmus and wide-wasting pestilence, dropsies and asthmas and joint-racking rheums, that's rheumatism. Dire was the tossing, deep the groans, despair tended the sick busiest from couch to couch, line 490, and over them triumphant, death his dart shook, but delayed to strike, though oft invoked with vows as their chief good and final hope. So he stands waiting to strike them and waits, even though they often with vows say, please, 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 that's the best thing that can happen to me, let me die. Sight so deform, what heart of rock could long dry-eyed behold? To see such an ugly sight, even a heart of rock could not stand there dry-eyed. Line 495. Adam could not but wept, though not of woman born. Compassion quelled his best of man, and gave him up to tears a space, till firmer thoughts restrained excess, and scarce recovering words his plaint renewed. Line 500. O miserable mankind, to what fall degraded, to what wretched state reserved? Better end here unborn. Why is life given to be thus wrested from us? Rather, why obtrude it on us thus? Who, if we knew what we receive, would either not accept life offered, or soon beg to lay it down, glad to be so dismissed in peace? Can thus the image of God in man created once so goodly and erect, though faulty since, to such unsightly sufferings be debased under inhuman pains? 511. Why should not man, retaining still divine similitude in part, from such deformities be free and from his Maker's image sake exempt? Okay, why, if we're creating God's image, does he have to suffer like this? Why can't he be exempt from that? Line 515. Their Maker's image, answered Michael, then forsook them, when themselves they vilified to serve ungoverned appetite, and took his image whom they served, a brutish vice, inductive mainly to the sin of Eve. Therefore, so abject is their punishment, disfiguring not God's likeness, but their own, or, if his likeness by themselves defaced while they pervert pure nature's healthful rules to loathsome sickness, worthily, since they God's image did not reverence in themselves. Okay, they didn't take care of themselves. 425. I yield it just, said Adam, and submit. But is there yet no other way, besides these painful passages, how we may come to death? Is there no alternative? And mix with our connatural dust? 530. There is, said Michael, if thou well observe the rule of not too much, by temperance taught in what thou eatest and drinkest, seeking from hence due nourishment, not gluttonous delight, till many years over thy head return, so mayest thou live, till like ripe fruit thou drop into thy mother's lap, or be with ease gathered, not harshly plucked, for death mature. This is old age. But then thou must outlive thy youth, thy strength, thy beauty, which will change to withered, weak, and gray. Thy senses then, line 540, okay, so Michael is describing old age to Adam. Thy senses then, obtuse, all taste of pleasure must forego to what thou hast, and for the air of youth, hopeful and cheerful, in thy blood will reign a melancholy damp of cold and dry to weigh thy spirits down, and last consume the balm of life. To whom our ancestor, so Adam says to Michael, henceforth I fly not death, nor would prolong life much, bent rather how I may be quit fairest and easiest of this cumbrance charge, okay, this body, which I must keep till my appointed day of rendering up, and patiently attend my dissolution. And Michael replies, nor love thy life, nor hate, but what thou livest, live well, how long or short, permit to heaven. What a great quote. So don't love your life, don't hate your life, but what you live, live well, and let God worry how long or short it will be. And now prepare thee for another sight. And line 556. He looked and saw a spacious plain, whereon were tents of various hue. By some were herds of cattle grazing, others whence the sound of instruments that made melodious chime was heard, of harp and organ, and who moved their stops and cords was seen. His volant touch, which is like a nimble touch, a flying piano player, his volant touch instinct through all proportions high and low fled and pursued transverse the resonant fugue, or musable, a musical composition. In other part stood one who at the forge laboring, two massy clods of iron and brass, had melted, whether found, where casual fire had wasted woods on mountain or in vale, down to the veins of earth, hence gliding hot to some cave's mouth, or whether washed by stream from underground, the liquid ore he drained into fit molds prepared. So they've dug down and got ore. Line 570, into fit molds prepared, from which he formed first his own tools. Then, what might else be wrought fusel, or to cast in metal, or graven in metal? After these, but on the hither side, a different sort from the high neighboring hills, which was their seat, down to the plain descended. By their guise, just men they seemed, and all their study bent to worship God aright, and know his works not hid, nor those things last which might persevere, preserve freedom and peace to men. They on the plain, line 580, long had not walked when from the tents, behold, a bevy of fair women, richly gay in gems and wanton dress. Wanton dress means too low, too short, too tight. To the harp they sung soft, amorous ditties, little love songs, and in dance came on. The men, though grave, eyed them, and let their eyes rove without rein. So the men are gawking, 585. Till in the amorous net first caught, they liked, and each his liking chose, and now of love they treat, till the evening star, love's harbinger, appeared. Then, all in heat, they light the nuptial torch, and bid invoke Hymen, then first to marriage rites invoked. With feast and music all the tents resound. Such happy interview and fair event of love and youth not lost. Songs, garlands, flowers, and charming symphonies attached the heart of Adam, soon inclined to admit delight, the bent of nature which he thus expressed. And so Adam is saying, wow, what pretty girls, that looks like fun. True opener of mine eyes, prime angel blessed, he says to Michael. Much better seems this vision, and more hope of peaceful days portends than the two past. Line 600. So seeing all these young men get the gorgeous girls they wanted, and go in and marry them all and party, Adam says, okay, this is better than the last thing I looked at, the murder. Those were of hate and death, or pain much worse. Here nature seems fulfilled in all her ends. And Michael is thinking that he's a little too naive. To whom thus Michael? Judge not what is best by pleasure, though to nature seeming meet. Created as thou art, to nobler end, holy and pure conformity divine. Line 606. Those tents thou sawest so pleasant were the tents of wickedness, wherein shall dwell his race who slew his brother, Cain's race. Studious they appear of arts that polish life, inventors rare, line 610, unmindful of their maker, though his spirit taught them, but they his gifts acknowledge none, yet they a beauteous offspring shall beget. For that fair female troop thou sawest, that seemed of goddesses, so blithe, so smooth, so gay, line 615, yet empty of all good wherein consists woman's domestic honor and chief praise, bred only and completed to the taste of lustful appetence, to sing, to dance, to dress, and troll the tongue, and roll the eye. To these, that sober race of men, whose lives religious titled them, the sons of God, shall yield up all their virtue, all their fame, ignobly to the trains and to the smiles of these fair atheists, and now swim in joy, ere long to swim at large, and laugh, for which the world ere long a world of tears must weep. So Milton is here in line 622 or 23, referring to these sons of God as being the, I think the Genesis 6 sons of God, children of Cain. To whom thus Adam, of short joy bereft, so this put it, this dampened Adam's joy, bereft him of joy, took his joy away. Oh, pity and shame, that they who to live well entered so fair should turn aside to tread paths indirect, or in the midway faint. But still, I see the tenor of man's woe holds on the same, from woman to begin. Here we have Adam blaming the woman again. From man's effeminate slackness it begins, saith the angel. So this is Michael talking to Adam, and man's effeminate slackness it begins. This is a, in line 634, this is a lazy man who is acting like a woman. He's not fulfilling his place in his family. From man's effeminate slackness it begins, saith the angel. Who should better hold his place by wisdom and superior gifts received? But now prepare thee for another scene. He looked and saw wide territory spread before him, towns and rural works between, cities of men with lofty gates and towers, concourse in arms, fierce faces threatening war, giants of mighty bone and bold emprise, part wield their arms, part curb the foaming steed, single or in array of battle ranged by horse and foot, nor idly mustering stood. One way a band select from forest forage drives a herd of bees, a fair oxen and fair kine, that's a cow. And of course this description of the entire world, this is very reminiscent of the Iliad. If you do classical literature and read the Iliad, there's a description at the end of the book, in book 18 I think, that has a description of Achilles' shield, and he has the whole world written on his shield. And this is very similar. Adam doesn't have a shield, but he's having the whole world of time shown to him. I believe we go right up to Milton's time. We also see this in Virgil's Aeneid. Aeneas has this same type of a shield with the whole world with prophecies all carved into it. Fair oxen and fair kine, line 647. From a fat meadow ground, or a fleecy flock, ewes and their bleeding lambs over the plain, their booty, scarce with life the shepherds fly, but call in aid, which makes a bloody fray, line 651. With cruel tournament the squadrons join, where cattle pastured late, now scattered lies with carcasses and arms, the ensanguined field deserted, others to a city strong lay siege. And so we have all of types of battle and killing. Encamped by beauty, scale, and mine, assaulting, others from the wall defend with dart and javelin, stones and sulphurous fire, on each hand slaughter and gigantic deeds. In other part, the sceptered heralds call to council in the city gates, 661. Anon, gray-headed men and grave with warriors mixed assemble, and harangues are heard, but soon in factious opposition, till at last, of middle age, one rising, eminent in wise deport. And this, line 665, this is Adam looking at Enoch. Enoch is the one who walked with God and then was not, from Genesis 5:24. And he'll tell you later, line 700, I think, here. So Adam sees Enoch, this one of middle age, rising, eminent in wise deport, 666, spake much of right and wrong, of justice, of religion, truth, and peace, and judgment from above. Him, old and young, exploded, and had seized with violent hands, had not a cloud descending, snatched him hence, line 670, unseen amid the throng. So violence proceeded, and so Enoch was just snatched from them and went to walk with God. So violence proceeded, and oppression, and sword law through all the plain, and refuge none was found. Adam was all in tears, and to his guide lamenting turned full sad. Line 675. Oh, what are these? Death's ministers, not men, who thus deal death inhumanly to men, and multiply 10,000-fold the sin of him who slew his brother, for of whom such massacre make they but of their brethren, men of men. Okay, if a man kills a man, he's killing his brother, in Adam's view. Line 680. But who was that just man, whom had not heaven rescued, had in his righteousness been lost? Who was that man, that if heaven hadn't rescued him, he would have been lost because he was righteous? To whom thus Michael, these are the product of those ill-mated marriages thou sawest, where good and bad were matched, who of themselves abhor to join, and by imprudence mixed produce prodigious births of body or mind. Such were these giants, men of high renown, for in those days might only shall be admired, and valor and heroic virtue called. If you are writing and you address the heroic worldview, they are can also be called classical virtues, and these are those classical virtues: might, valor, heroic virtue, which is not virtue pure of heart. This is virtue, or if you did classical literature, the Greek word arete, it means being the best that you can be, excellence, but not in anything that you think associated with the Judeo-Christian worldview. It is excellence, which they call virtue, excellence in sport, in valor, in bravery, in strength, in getting spoils, you know, the biggest toys. The guy with the most toys wins. That is your heroic worldview. Gets the most glory, the one who gets the most fame, because that's all that can live after you die. That's all that can live on after you. That's line 687 through 690. And valor and heroic virtue called to overcome in battle and subdue nations and bring home spoils with infinite manslaughter shall be held the highest pitch of human glory. So he tells Adam, that's what's going to be the most valuable thing. When we get to the classical world, by the time of Homer or the Trojan War, for example, about 1200 BC, that is what will be the most important thing, the highest pitch of human glory. And for glory done of triumph, to be styled great conquerors, 695, patrons of mankind, gods and sons of gods, destroyers rightly are called, and plagues of men, thus fame shall be achieved, renown on earth, and what most merits fame in silence hid. So the good things that should most merit fame, should most earn you fame, those will be hidden in silence. Good deeds, being righteous, they will in silence hide. Line 700. But he, the seventh from thee, that's how we know this is Enoch, whom thou beheldest, the only righteous in a world perverse and therefore hated, therefore so beset with foes for daring single to be just, to utter odious truth, that God would come to judge them with his saints, him, the Most High, wrapped in a balmy cloud with winged steeds, did, as thou sawest, receive to walk with God, high in salvation and the climes of bliss. So Michael's describing this to Adam, telling how God took Enoch, exempt from death, to show thee what reward awaits the good, the rest what punishment, which now direct thine eyes and soon behold. Okay, we're punishment. So he looked, Adam looked, and saw the face of things quite changed. The brazen throat of war had ceased to roar, and now was turned to jollity and game, to luxury and riot, feast and dance. Line 715. Marrying or prostituting as befell, rape or adultery, where passing fair allured them, hence from cups to civil broils. At length a reverend sire among them came. This reverend sire is Noah. Okay, the world has been reduced to jollity and game, riot and feasting, dancing, marrying, prostituting, adultery. A reverend sire among them came, and of their doings great dislike declared. So he declared he greatly disliked their doings, that God disliked that, and testified against their ways. He oft frequented their assemblies, where so met triumphs or festivals, and to them preached conversion and repentance, as to souls in prison under judges imminent. Line 725. But all in vain, which when he saw, he ceased contending and removed his tents far off. Then from the mountain, hewing timber tall, began to build a vessel of huge bulk. And, of course, what is this in line 729? This is the ark. Measured by cubit, length and breadth and height, smeared round with pitch, and in the side a door contrived, and of provisions laid in large for man and beast, when, lo, a wonder strange! Of every beast and bird and insect small came sevens and pairs, and entered in as taught their order. Last, the sire, that's Noah, and his three sons, that would be Shem, Ham, and Japheth, with their four wives, and God made fast the door. Meanwhile, The south wind rose, and with black wings wide hovering, all the clouds together drove from under heaven. Okay, so it's getting cloudy and stormy. Line 740. The hills to their supply vapor and exhalation dusk and moist set up amain. And now the thickened sky like a dark ceiling stood. Down rushed the rain impetuous and continued till the earth no more was seen. The floating vessel swum uplifted, and secure, with beaked prow, rode tilting over the waves, all dwellings else flood overwhelmed, and then, with all their pomp, deep under water rolled, sea-covered sea, sea without shore. This is the flood, line 750, and in their palaces, where luxury late reigned, sea monsters whelped and stabled, of mankind so numerous late, all left in one small bottom, swum, embarked. And so Michael's showing Adam the flood and all the beautiful palaces where people were living in luxury. Now sea monsters were whelping and stabling, living there, having their young and sleeping there. And of mankind so numerous late, line 752, all that was left was in one small bottom. How didst thou grieve then, Adam, to behold the day of all thy offspring end so sad, line 755, depopulation, thee another flood of tears and sorrow, a flood thee also drowned, and sunk thee as thy sons, till gently reared by the angel, on thy feet thou stoodest at last, though comfortless, as when a father mourns his children, all in view destroyed at once, and scarce to the angel utterest thy complaint. And Adam says, O visions ill foreseen, better had I lived ignorant of the future, so had borne my part of evil only, line 765. Each day's lot enough to bear, those now that were dispensed to the burden of many ages, on me light at once, by my foreknowledge gaining birth abortive, to torment me ere their being, with thought that they must be. Line 770, let no man seek henceforth to be foretold what shall befall him or his children. Evil he may be sure, which neither his foreknowing can prevent, and he, the future evil, shall no less in apprehension than in substance feel grievous to bear. But that care now is past. Man is not whom to warn. Those few escaped famine and anguish will at last consume, wandering that watery desert. I had hope when violence was ceased and war on earth. All would have then gone well. Peace would have crowned with length of happy days the race of man. But I was far deceived, for now I see peace to corrupt no less than war to waste. How comes it thus? Unfold, celestial guide. Line 785. Adam is describing the human condition there. He's saying, oh my goodness, you don't even have to warn. It won't help to warn man, line 777, because even those who escape famine or anguish, there will be consumed wandering in that watery desert. They'll all be drowned in the flood. And he says, I'd hoped when the violence was over and the war was over, then they would have gone well, and that peace would have brought them happy days and long lives. But he sees now he was deceived, and he says that peace corrupts no less than war does to waste. So he says, how come, how come it thus untold, celestial guide, and whether here the race of man will end? To whom thus Michael? So Michael says now in line 787, those whom last thou sawest in triumph and luxurious wealth, are they first seen in acts of prowess eminent and great exploits, but of true virtue void. Who, having spilt much blood and done much waste, subduing nations and achieving thereby fame in the world, high titles and rich prey, shall change their course to pleasure, ease, and sloth, surfeit and lust, till wantonness and pride rise out of friendship, hostile deeds in peace. The conquered also and enslaved by war shall with their freedom, lost all virtue, lose and fear of God. With their freedom lost, all virtue lose and fear of God. So though even those who are enslaved by war, with their freedom, will lose their virtue, and they're going to lose their fear of God. From whom their piety feigned in sharped contest of battle found no aid against invaders. And so they pretended to be pious as they pretended they pretended that they want that God was on their side, but found no aid against the invaders. And so they lost their faith. 801, therefore, cooled in zeal, henceforth shall practice how to live secure, worldly or dissolute, on what their lords shall leave them to enjoy. So from here on out, they're just going to practice how to live safely. For the earth shall bear more than enough, that temperance may be tried. Line 805. So all shall turn degenerate, all depraved. Justice and temperance, truth and faith forgot. One man except, the only son of light in a dark age. Against example, good. Against allurement, custom, and a world offended. Fearless of reproach and scorn or violence. He of their wicked ways shall them admonish. He'll tell them it's bad for them to do that. And before them set the paths of righteousness. How much more safe and full of peace. Line 815. Denouncing wrath to come on their impenitence, and shall return on them derided, but of God observed, the one just man alive, by his command shall build a wondrous ark. And so this is Noah, as thou beheldest, to save himself and household from amidst a world devote to universal wrack. Line 821. No sooner he with them of man and beast, select for life, shall in the age be lodged, in the ark be lodged, and sheltered round, but all the cataracts of heaven set open on the earth shall pour rain day and night, all fountains of the deep broke up, shall heave the ocean to usurp beyond all bounds, till inundation, flood, rise above the highest hills. Then shall this mount of paradise, by might of waves, be moved out of his place, pushed by the horned flood. Line 831. And otherwise, paradise is going to be ruined by the flood, Adam. Even this mountain, it won't be here anymore. With all his verdure spoiled and trees adrift down the great river to the opening gulf, and there take root an island salt and bare, the haunt of seals and orcs, which are whales, and sea mews clang. 835. To teach thee that God attributes to place no sanctity, if none be hither brought by men who there frequent or therein dwell. And now, what further shall ensue? Behold. Line 840, it continues. He looked, and saw the ark whole on the flood, which now abated, for the clouds were fled, driven by a keen north wind, that blowing dry wrinkled the face of deluge as decayed, and the clear sun on his wide watery glass gazed hot, and of the fresh wave largely drew. As after thirst, which made their flowing shrink from standing lake to tripping ebb, that stole with soft foot towards the deep, who now had stopped his sluices, as the heaven his windows shut. The ark no more now floats, but seems on ground, fast on the top of some high mountain fixed. Line 851. And now the tops of hills as rocks appear. With clamor hence the rapid currents drive towards the retreating sea, their furious tide. Forthwith, from out of the ark, a raven flies, and after him, the surer messenger, a dove, sent forth once and again to spy green tree or ground wherein his foot may light. The second time returning, in his bill an olive leaf he brings. Pacific sign, line 860. Anon, dry ground appears, and from his ark, the ancient sire descends with all his train. Then, with uplifted hands and eyes devout, grateful to heaven, over his head beholds a dewy cloud. And in the cloud, a bow, conspicuous with three listed colors gay, beckoning peace from God and covenant new. So Adam sees the rainbow. Whereat the heart of Adam, erst so sad, before so sad, greatly rejoiced, and thus his joy broke forth. And this is line 870, Adam speaking. O thou who future things canst represent as present, heavenly instructor, I revive at this last sight, assured that man shall live with all the creatures, and their seed preserve. Far less I now lament for one whole world of wicked sons destroyed, than I rejoice for one man found so perfect and so just, that God vouchsafes, or promises, to raise another world from him, and all his anger to forget. And so he says, even I'm lamenting, in line 874, I'm lamenting less the whole world that was lost because I'm rejoicing that one was found so perfect and just, and God will raise another world from him, and all his anger to forget. But say, what mean those colored streaks in heaven, distended as the brow of God appeased, or serve thee as a flowery verge to bind the fluid skirts of that same watery cloud, lest it again dissolve and shower the earth? Okay, he thinks the rainbow is maybe something to tie up the water. To whom the archangel, Dexterously thou aimest, so willingly doth God remit his ire, though late repenting him of man depraved, grieved at his heart, when looking down he saw the whole earth filled with violence, and all flesh corrupting each their way. Yet those removed, when he got rid of all the people except Noah, such grace shall one just man find in his sight, line 890, that he relents, not to blot out mankind, and makes a covenant never to destroy the earth again by flood, nor let the sea surpass his bounds, nor rain to drown the world, with man therein or beast. But when he brings over the earth a cloud, will therein set his triple-colored bow, whereon to look and call to mind his covenant. So the rainbow is a reminder of the covenant. Day and night, seed time and harvest, heat and hoary frost shall hold their course till fire purge all things new, both heaven and earth, wherein the just shall dwell. And that is the end of book 11.